This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Hey, good morning. Good to have you with us here on In Focus. I'm Roger Gray. We're going to talk a little bit about solar power. Well, we're going to talk a lot, actually, about solar power today. Rudy Wright is with us with Right Way Solar. Good morning.
Well, good morning, sir.
Good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
All right, let's get right into it. You guys, I mean, to get the plug out of the way first, you guys install solar panels.
Install, service, and a lot of times talk people out of it, I hate to say. But, yeah. You know, not everybody's a perfect fit. So you have to at least have that ethical compass to go, well, you really don't need solar. You need a better insulation or some other avenue.
Well, I mean, that's admirable, I must say. But the thing to me about solar that strikes me, I'm a big fan. I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't know why things like this have become so political all of a sudden. You know, doesn't make sense to me anyway. Power's power. The more, the merrier. You know, best of both. Do whatever works. And
yeah, I mean, it's sad how much that politics infringes in every aspect. But I think the first time that I spotted it, other than just when I got in the business, everybody assumed I was kind of far left and, you know, got the ponytail. And really, when California started mandating it, that's when I was like, oh, wow, okay. You know, it's one thing to say, hey, if you want to buy it on your house, you can use some of your tax money.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, when it's mandated, I had a lot of folks going, ooh, don't you think I should do that here? I was like, no, man, I'd quit.
I think part of the problem is it's become a zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. It's either all this or all that.
Yeah.
I figure there's a lot of room for both. I think 30% of the power for the state of Texas is wind and solar.
Yeah, we cover a lot of ground. I think that's the key thing. You know, everybody talks in absolutes, and there's so much gray.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most people don't even get to addressing or identifying what their solar goal would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's those that just want to save the money and be independent from the grid, which sadly, you know, that's the cake and eat it too scenario.
Indeed, and considering the Texas grid, that's probably not a bad idea.
The peace of mind is priceless. You know, we finally achieved grid optional status at my place in the last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of had a sense that prices might be coming up. So we went ahead and, you know, went heavy on some lithium because my utility rate doubled in my most recent contract renewal.
Mm.
And my demand charge is still normally 2/3 of my bill.
Wow.
You know, there's a lot of folks that solar and batteries can make a whole lot of sense. But once you get into preparing for grid outages, there has to be, I normally tell folks, 25 to 50% of it has to be about the peace of mind more than the payback. Because, you know, the batteries are just still so darn expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's always cheaper to rent your utility, you know, it seems.
Oh, yeah. Well, and like anything else, the more there are of them out there, the more are sold, the price goes down.
Yeah.
That's just life in a free economy.
We're selling entire systems now cheaper than I paid for my first panels. Back in 08, I remember bragging about paying $325 a watt for my first big batch of panels that I ordered.
Mm-hmm.
And now a fully installed system normally runs around $250 a watt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
not bad.
It's come a long way.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because you talk about panels for an individual home, that sort of thing, or a business or whatever. I was listening to a story about one of those huge solar farms that had been built.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Texas, but they were probably about to go out of business because individual solar has become so inexpensive. It used to be, you know, it's one of those, you know, with a tall tower and a field full of mirrors and so forth, or panels, I should say, and it's just you don't need that anymore to provide power.
Yeah, I haven't read that particular story,
yeah.
But there's definitely, you know, a lot of the different concepts out there get so complex. And then I know in our area, there's times when the grid is almost paying people to take power. You know, that's one of the challenges with wind is, you know, when the winds are running high, they need the grid to take it. And when I signed up, admittedly, didn't know the full definition of the term, a real-time price. I thought that sounded fair, you know. So I signed up for a real-time price, and actually it was 0.002 cents a kilowatt hour most of the time when I sold energy on pretty days. But yeah, things like that can really flip the market on its head.
Well, let's talk about solar panels and solar power, because as I said, one of the reasons I was talking about the big solar generating facility is that the panels have become so affordable for people. What has brought that down? I hate to say imports, but That has to be part of it.
That's a huge drive. Yeah. I mean, what I saw, you know, in 08, we got into the market predominantly because the 30% tax rebate was lifted. And because there was a local utility incentive. And without those two things combined, solar was just too expensive. The panels alone were $3.25 a watt.
Yeah.
Well, what happened is, yeah, obviously a lot of imports drove it down. There's obviously been some challenges with market flooding. I mean, arguably, I couldn't sell you a piece of tempered glass for what China's selling us, a solar panel embedded in a tempered glass.
Sure.
So there's some challenges there, but that's been a huge part of it. The technology and the inverters has come a long way. Yeah, I mean, it's went from a, you know, normally a $50,000 to $80,000 investment on a person's house to try and make a dent is now a 15 to 30. It's made a huge impact at the bottom line, and hopefully those prices will stay at least stable. I know that, you know, there's definitely some uptick here lately. We've been buying American for almost 10 years.
See. So they are made here.
Yeah, they are made here. The challenge is even buying American. 80-85% of the global silica cell manufacturing is totally controlled by China.
Okay.
So, you know, even my American-made panels, at some point in the way, there's not much chance that they're not still importing parts.
Well, let's talk about how this works. In a state like Texas, it's hot, it's sunny most of the time, and it's windy.
Yeah.
It just makes sense to take advantage of it because that part's free. Let's talk about how solar actually works.
Well, with solar, you know, my favorite way to try and help people think about it is, I remember when I was a kid, I'd walk around my sock feet and occasionally reach out and touch the doorknob and zap myself.
Yeah.
Well, with solar, anytime the sunlight's hitting those cells, it's like that kid scooting his feet on the carpet.
Okay.
And we hook a wire to it instead of having to reach out and touch the doorknob. And so the whole time the sun is shining, we're getting that steady flow of that little static charge.
Sure.
And you string enough of those together now and then hook that to an inverter that's going to take that DC power, kind of like your car's battery, if you will. It's going to invert that into AC power and shove it backwards up your lines, basically forcing your house to use it before you sell it. It's pretty darn neat.
Yeah. Well, how does it affect your light bill? You don't really supplant the power unless you go completely off the grid. But how does that mesh with your external power source?
And that's what's been so exciting, really, in the last 20 years. You know, back in the day, you had to have batteries. You had to cordon off part of your house that you wanted to run on that, have convenient bypass gear for when the batteries got low.
Okay.
Well, then we got to what we called a grid interactive inverter. And now they're actually calling most of them these days hybrid inverters, because you have one inverter that'll take from the battery and maintain a grid for your loads. It'll also deal with the solar. It'll start the generator, all the bells and whistles built into one box. But the real challenge is making sure that your loads are dialed in with what you've got available to you in your system.
Okay.
So it's really just a matter of making sure. Most people are so wasteful and they don't even realize it. I mean, the average American is wasting at least 30, if not 60% of their electric bill annually. And so in most cases, we can come in and trim that off the top. And then, you know, augment the solar with creation. And the real challenge in Texas is the power companies are really tightening the rules. Back, you know, 20 years ago, they'd pay you dollar for dollar all the time. Now that you have to really jump through hoops to get anywhere near the rate you have to buy the energy for. And so a lot of people that jumped in and financed the system and bought 100% offset, they're not quite getting the return they were promised because the market shifted.
Okay. So in the market shifting, what does that mean to the individual homeowner, let's say?
Well, it really just means that, like, in most of Texas, most of your listening areas in the deregulated market, Encore maintains the grid, but you can drop and buy from anybody.
Okay.
Well, in that market, in order to get a dollar for dollar. Now, I just heard from one person today, and if you're in solar and you're shopping, check Green Mountain. Hopefully it's still there because they don't stick around long. But these different companies will occasionally have dollar for dollar with no monthly membership fee buyback. Now, even when they have that, they're not factoring the Encore delivery fee, which is about a third of your final end result bill.
Okay.
So if you have 100% solar buyback and 100% solar creation system, you end up breaking even. You're still going to have a little bill because of Encore. But in the co-ops, it can be even worse. A lot of the co-ops are getting to where they're paying you 3 or 5 cents a kilowatt hour and charging you 12. And then there's an extra $25 for the privilege. Oh, and 250 to look at your system. And, oh, you want one of those inverters? You can't even have that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
My dad was an electrical engineer, and I'm still needing to think of these things simplistically here. So you've got the panels, you've got the inverter, you've got the power for your house.
Right.
Maybe not everything you need, but it augments, right?
Yeah, that is the beauty. We sidetracked a little off.
I suppose you could get everything you need if you did.
It depends on how big your system is. But what's so beautiful about today's grid-tied, grid-interactive inverters is they look at what the power company's doing. They match it so perfectly, and then they raise the voltage just enough to make their energy go upstream.
Okay.
So your devices don't even know the difference, and they are, by physics, forced to use your created energy first.
Okay.
If you have leftover.
So yours is first.
Yours is first priority, yeah, because in essence, you're on the opposite, the far end of your own personal network.
Okay.
And the meter being the part that matters.
Yeah.
So before anything could come in from the meter, everything you're producing has to be consumed.
Okay.
Anything you need beyond what you're creating, you just buy that little bit extra, and nobody's the wiser other than, you know, you got what you wanted, the power company didn't have to provide all of it.
Okay. An average house, let's say, in Texas, 1,800, let's say 2,200 square feet, something like that.
Something like that. Three bed, two and a half bath.
Yeah. Like what would you be looking at in terms of how much would you have to have solar panel-wise to power that house completely?
And most people are going to attack it at the square footage angle. The first key question I would still have is it all gas? I mean, all electric?
Yeah.
Or do we have some gas?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to make it a little easier on my side, we'll go ahead and say it's a gas home.
Okay.
You know, most of our older East Texas homes, you know, have gas, water heater, gas heat. Those type homes, a 10 kW solar system with a sticker price around 25 grand would be the vast majority, if not their lifetime supply of power.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really, you know, a neat setup. And
so
that's
before. You can say goodbye to Encore, SWEPCO, all those guys, you know, sort of.
You're grid interactive, so you're still using them at night and selling them your extra in the pretty day.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the trade-off, I always am cautious to tell my customers, you're still going to have a bill. It's going to be laughably small compared to if you didn't. But, yes, to get rid of the bill, you really almost have to have batteries anymore because the power company's only going to give you pennies on the dollar.
Standard arguments about solar. Well, the sun doesn't always shine, for goodness sakes. I read what you said about kind of a cloudy day, and I thought of it like sunscreen. You can still get a sunburn on a cloudy day.
That's definitely a great example. Yeah, I mean, you know, it really has to be pretty depressing outside for your panels.
Almost raining,
yeah, really heavy overcast, heavy rain. And even with that, though, when we do an annual analysis of what that system's going to make, we take into consideration local weather patterns, soiling. You know, our area is rated at almost 5.5 sun hours. And, you know, that matters where you are.
What, on average? What I'm not understanding that.
So, basically, the National Weather Service and, you know, a lot of the different collegiate groups all get together, and they have a sun hour rating for each little area of the world. You know, it kind of follows our longitude and latitude network.
All right.
But in our particular area, we're about 5.25 to 5.5, depending on which part of East Texas. You know, you get out in Arizona, and they got, you know, 6, 7, 8. 8 hours. So it's factoring weather patterns and all of that, and basically saying over the course of a 365-day year, the average amount of Sundays you're going to get is that.
Okay.
And that's one of the key things we always tell people when you're doing power calculations, no matter how you slice it, we're factoring some averages here. It's going to be give or take 5 or 10%, but, you know, it's sad how many times I've caught other, you know, companies with their finger on the scale, because you can sure impact what you tell a system it would produce.
And obviously, as with clouds, the sun's going to go down. You talked about batteries at night. That's usually the argument I hear when it comes to solar power, is you store it up, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
You use the batteries at night. Sun comes up again the next day.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real beauty. If you have,
that sounds simple, I know.
If you have reasonable energy needs.
Yeah.
An all-electric home, if it's, I zero in on that snowpocalypse a lot for an example of hard to get through your local energy needs.
Right.
Well, an all-electric home would very likely, one I just looked at, had two double 40-amp breakers and double 30-amp breaker setups for just the heating. So just running his heat, he could have, 140 amps of load? You know, you'd have to have an industrial, not an air-cooled, a big old liquid-cooled generator just to run that. And a lot of folks, you know, want to buy a little battery system and run it. And it just, You got to be more efficient. Now, if you get like a little off-grid tiny house kind of thing, now all of a sudden a little solar and a little battery and, you know, a little generator to bridge some gaps. A whole lot of it's just really doing the math and looking at what you really want to accomplish and how much room and energy you really got to have to do it with.
You say we waste a lot of energy.
Yeah.
What do you see that people are doing that they could really tighten up on?
Man, I tell you, a big example, and a lot of people are like, well, I don't like gas, but there's several other ways to do it. A water heater, a typical American electric water heater.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, most people are paying $50 to $70 a month just for the dang electric water heater. The government rates them at 5,000 kilowatt hours a year, pretty close, give or take 500 or 600. And so if you were to go to a heat pump water heater, even if you were in an area where you didn't have propane or natural gas, a heat pump water heater is shaving 65% of that off. They're only using about 1,800 kilowatt hours a year. Plus, most of that 1,800 kilowatt hours is creating a cool breeze.
Well, I know what a heat pump AC system is. How would that apply to a water heater?
They miniaturize the same concept as your whole heat pump on your house.
Okay.
But miniaturized unit mounted on top of your water heater, matching the same circumference, all nice and pretty and polished.
Wow.
Blows cool air in your laundry room or your attic or your garage or wherever it happens to be. But if it happens to be inside your energy envelope, then you're not only are you using 3,000 less kilowatt hours a year for heating hot water, you're probably using another 300 less for cooling your space.
Okay.
There's a little negative in northern climates or in about 2 weeks a year here in Texas. The heat pumps are an amazing option. They still are, and that's the sad truth of it, is to get into a heat pump costs 4 or 5 times as much as to just go in and buy a cheap electric. But the electric costs 4 to 5 times as much to run it. And by the time you pay that for the life expectancy of the gear, it's a real no-brainer. Yeah.
You talk about other climates. I was a news director up in Wyoming for a while. A lot of swamp coolers up there.
Yeah.
Wouldn't work here.
No.
Because too humid.
Yeah.
But they work beautifully, frankly.
Yeah, I've encountered them a lot, about 200 miles or more away from here. But yeah, you're right. I've never really seen anybody satisfied with them around here.
So it seems like we've gotten the technology down to a point where it is a very practical option for people, you know, for their individual homes.
Yeah.
What is it like to install? Do people worry about, oh, I'm going to have that stuff on my roof, you know, it's going to leak in the rain? How does it work?
There are typically, you know, the occasional husband or wife, it's almost 50-50, that doesn't like the look of the panels.
Yeah.
They have done a lot over the years from, you know, originally they were basically silver framed,
right,
you know, blue, crystalline looking cells. Now they're black on black on black, you know, and they really kind of blend. And then we've also done basically a wrap like you would do on a car on solar panels to make them look like a Spanish tile roof or make them look like whatever your shingle is.
Really?
We can solve aesthetic concerns.
That doesn't affect the photovoltaic?
It is about a 10% performance hickey and probably a dollar a watt cost premium.
Okay.
So it's not for the faint of pocketbook, but it is still 90% of the energy you wanted and 100% of the look that you might have been willing to have.
That's interesting. I've a Spanish tile roof. I'm trying to picture that. But as far as when you or somebody else installs it in your house, what does that involve?
Well, for most folks, we're talking a standard shingle roof. You know, we're going to come in and get our layout all measured out, make sure it's going to be centered up and there's not any shade that we weren't, you know, predicting or aware of. A satellite dish got snuck in, you know, since our satellite imagery was taken that we used for design or something. But 99% of the time, our design's spot on, measured all out, getting a proper stagger on all of the feet, and then using the best possible installation attachment points.
Okay.
A lot of these DIY kits, they'll sell basically a little Z-bar, and you literally self-tapper it into the solar panel and self-tapper it into the roof and pray it doesn't leak.
Yeah.
And if you ever have to work on anything, you're taking it off the roof. The quality systems, where we install it, we have a professional mount that's in most cases flash, but they're actually coming out with some flashing, not needed mounts where they basically have a sealant pocket underneath.
Yeah.
And when you puncture that, it, you know, basically seals itself into the roof system.
Okay.
And then you mount everything onto that so that if you ever need to service anything, you can get to it. It's a bit stronger. We typically design for 100 mile an hour winds, even though we're in a 90 mile an hour zone.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically, you know, getting a good stagger, we're literally mounting on the roof rafters, not the decking. And then, you get everything structurally attached, and then we got to get it wired in.
So you take it through the decking to the rafters?
Yes, sir. Yeah, because otherwise you got a lot of uplift, especially around the perimeter.
Yeah.
I've seen lots of videos. I've never had a tornado damage a structure we've been mounted on.
Mm-hmm.
I have had tornadoes damage 100 trees all around our ground mounts, and the ground mount survived. Long story short, I've seen pictures of roofs where the only thing left was the solar panels. The decking and shingles and all was gone everywhere else.
Wow.
But where the panels were, they held the...
Panels are thinner now than they used to be, right? I mean, our mental image is probably from the early days of all of this, and it was a pretty thick operation. Haven't I seen stories, and I just obviously not for your house necessarily, but panels that are almost flexible.
Yeah, I mean, actually, there is flexible stuff on the market that's mostly aimed at like RVs and the schoolies where they're putting them on buses and just basically peel and stick. Almost any of those to be flexible, though, they're not the silicon cell.
Right.
The silicon cells have been proven to last the longest and have the best efficiency. And so, you know, yes, our original panels were typically about a 2-inch thick frame.
Mm-hmm.
The first panels that we handled were 180 watt for a household size system.
Okay.
You know, whereas most of the guys today are throwing 400 or 500 watt panels. But panels have also just gotten huge. You know, the original panels were, you know, 2x3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then they spent a long time basically at 3x5.
Okay.
I have to work hard to find the 3x5 panels because those 500 and 600 waters, they're 7 foot by 5 foot wide.
Wow.
It is hard to get on a roof with one of them big bad boys.
I would imagine. You know, and we talk about batteries, and without getting political here. I know Tesla makes, for example, and I'm sure they're not the only ones. That's just one that came to mind.
Yeah.
They make these big home storage batteries. Is that what you'd be talking about if you were aiming toward ultimately being completely independent?
Yes, sir. You know, it really just depends on your goal. For the longest time, the Tesla Powerwalls were, 11, 12 kilowatt hours. Their latest big bad boy is 13 and a half.
Okay.
At my office facility, I have 500 kilowatt hours, and some of my clients have 1,000 kilowatt hours.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest that they'll let you stack on the Teslas is only about 8 of them together. So once you hit about 200 kilowatt hours, or for your most your gas American home, that's about 2 days storage. For your all electric, that might make the night.
But if you had gas available to you, that would get you through 2 days?
Yeah. The Tesla Powerwall.
Just on the battery alone?
Yes, sir. Because if you think about it, you know, all it really has to run is the fan motor for the central to warm the house off the flame.
Yeah.
If you're cooking off gas, you just have a little logic board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of your big loads are typically when people try and make things hot by short-circuiting stuff.
Okay. And I would suppose, getting back to the wasteful part, are we using too much? Are we not insulated well enough? Are we just being careless?
It's all of the above. You know, I'm also a master certified green builder, and that's really what brought me into solar.
Mm-hmm.
Was I first started trying to build a better building, and you know, then realized once you made something use 60% less energy, it wasn't as impossible to foresee solar powering it. But when you really thought it needed all this much energy,
then
it was a daunting task. So, you know, what we're typically seeing is most people have anywhere from 6 to maybe it started out at 16 or 18 or might even have been 24 inches of normal cellulose type blown insulation.
Right.
And I normally tell people to think of that type insulation like a cheesecloth. And you may have 2 or 3 layers of cheesecloth over your coffee, but your coffee's still going to get a lot colder with that than it would with a Tupperware lid. And so a spray foam retrofit, we're normally saving 20 to 40% just with that one silver bullet alone.
Wow.
The water heater's normally another 10, 15% savings. Mm-hmm. If we go tankless, we can boost that even more. But if we do the heat pump, we're saving $3,000. Tankless, we're saving $5,000 a year.
Okay.
So like I said, in many cases, that's a third of that little home. If it was all electric, we'd be shaving a third off with that and then converting them from gas heat or to electric heat. From electric heat over to gas heat, will save them a lot, especially because the latest gas heaters are 98% efficient. And a lot of people don't realize where the technology's come, but we're literally intaking and exhausting on PVC exterior air. So it's no longer the old days where you might be battling with your heater for oxygen.
And that's another misconception about, you know, nobody was taking away gas heaters. They were making them more efficient.
Yeah.
The efficiency standards just went up, and it was only for new ones, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there has been some talk about like the wood stoves or whatever in some other markets, but thankfully, you know, we've been able to get access to all the products we want to bring to our clients.
Yeah.
Biggest pushback I normally have is people are like, well, I don't have a propane panel I can put on my roof. and while I agree, propane doesn't go bad.
Yeah.
And so storing up on another means of energy, you know, solar's great.
Yeah.
But we do it. There's no silver bullet for, you know, anything we want to do as humans. So we need to diversify.
That's what I said. You know, even for generalized power, use natural gas, use solar, use wind, use it all.
Yes,
you know,
sir. Yes, sir.
It's all available. What if you have an old house? And I'm a good example.
Yeah.
I live not in Tyler, another town. I live in a house that's 150 years old this year. It's got a little historical marker on it. I mean, this thing was built in 1875. Yeah, I know. But a gas water heater, gas heat, electric air, and a just a real old house. So what do you have to start thinking about? I like the historic nature of it. I'd love to make the bills a little smaller.
Yeah, you know.
And not everybody's going to be that old, I understand. But
the old ones are my favorite because there's so much benefit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody has 2 feet of blown cellulose, the spray foam's not going to be as impactful if you haven't done anything, which undoubtedly you at least have something.
Yeah.
But, you know, they didn't have any insulation until 1950s.
Yeah, well,
you know, just wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, arguably if the house is starting with none, you know, certainly getting it sealed up would be the top priority list. But we've had several where we've injected foam into the walls by drilling cores, either on the inside or the outside, depending on which was willing to have to patch.
Yeah.
But by injecting foam into the walls to get that airtight and then spray foam in the lid, you know, you've now made what once was an extremely drafty old home now super airtight. And it's just, you know, amazing how much energy moves with any air movement. And most people don't really think about it in that light. But if air is moving at all, it's taking a lot of energy with it. Either it's dragging in cold or it's dragging in moisture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so typically we try and build a positive pressure into any setups that we're designing when possible. Because it's a lot better to leak a little bit of your energized, energy-invested purified air than to be pulling even just a little bit of nasty air from little nooks and crannies all over the place. But in the perfect world, obviously, you want to get it as airtight as possible.
Yeah, but that makes sense. So you add some pressure from the inside out, in other words.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, depending on the size of the home, you know, we can just build that into how we redo the air conditioning by simply bringing a duct of fresh air in. And anytime the system's running, you're having to be built in a positive pressure.
Okay.
Now, when that system's off, you might go back to a static. So that's where having things like an energy recovery ventilator or heat recovery ventilator can end up, you know, bridging the gap. But certainly that's one of the key things I try and help people think about with solar is it's not a solar sledgehammer that solves the problem. You know?
Yeah.
It's a well-balanced whole house approach. It's not wasting energy, you know, because, you can typically accomplish the goal a lot better with a little bit of both. You know?
Sure. Last question.
Yeah.
Hailstorm. You talked about the fact that in many cases the panels won't get blown off, but will they get damaged?
We made it 15 years before I encountered my first panel damage in our general local area, and even from ones I didn't install. And most of the ones we get calls on are not ones we've installed. That said, I don't know if you recall here recently, we had a really nasty hailstorm out in Ponta, just outside of Jacksonville. I have one client out that way. He's on the grid. And we ended up with, out of, I think, 250 panels, he had 3 that took some damage. So the warranty spec on the panel is 100 mile an hour golf ball size hail. Will bounce right off of them at a glancing blow. But if it happens to somehow line up to a perfect 90-degree impact, it cuts that in half.
Direct hit,
And believe it or not, there's some databases where we can kind of go look what the area's hail was registered, radared as. And we typically don't see any damage from solar unless it's bad enough. You've got windshields, gutters, you know, countless roofs everywhere. And that's where, you know, insurance is worth having.
Yes. Well, Rudy, we're out of time. If people want to find out more about it, what's your number?
Yeah.
How do they find you?
Best way to check us out is on the web at right-way.com. But I always love chatting solar. Anybody's welcome to call me at 903-352-0298. And, like I said, solar has just been such a fascination for such a long time. I sure appreciate you letting us come chat about this.
Oh, hey, that's all right. Rudy, I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. And thank all of you guys. We will have this up on the web at ktbb.com. And we will see you next week.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.